More saving, more doing. U.S. only while supplies last. See store for details. Valid through April 12th.
This show furnished by Girardi Keys.
Hello, I'm Dave Dino, and this is Champions of Justice. This is the program that takes you behind the scenes with those who make the laws and those who protect your rights through the rule of law. Your host is attorney Thomas Girardi. Tom Girardi is the founding partner of the law firm of Girardi & Keys, known for passionate litigation of corporate giants on behalf of aggrieved individuals. He is a member of the California State Bar Trial Lawyer Hall of Fame and the recipient of the Southern California Radio and Television News Association Golden Mike Award. Tom is widely regarded by his peers as one of the nation's top trial lawyers. Each week, we bring you this informative and entertaining hour, bringing clarity to the headline-generating legal challenges of the day, and we've got a very different kind of a program for you today. Our guest is Philip Moulton. Philip Moulton has become the go-to speaker for business leaders and organizations all across North America who use his exclusive READ system for deception detection to gain advantages in professional and personal settings. The READ system is an extraordinary, research-grounded, and technique-based approach to interpreting body language and identifying liars. And from time to time, Phil still prosecutes crimes for the city of Los Angeles through the fellowship program of the prestigious Trial Advocacy Project. He has been repeatedly voted a Southern California super lawyer and is a nationally recognized expert in deception, detection, and body language. Mr. Moulton combines his noted experience cross-examining witnesses and influencing jurors with years of evaluating and analyzing scientific studies on body language, facial expression, and deception detection techniques to offer fascinating insights that leave audiences not only more informed, but indeed entertained. And unlike other so-called body language experts, Philip Moulton combines practical experience with the actual science of reading people, which in turn offers real strategies that anyone can use to uncover subtle behaviors that mask or even broadcast unintended messages about what a person is really thinking and feeling. This is because Phil's READ system is the basic science-based body language system that emphasizes a technique designed to eliminate false positive findings. So today, get a little bit closer to the radio, and we'll tell you if you're telling the truth. Tom?
Hi, everybody. Hey, thanks for joining us. All right, Dave Dino, I wish I would have known this guy about 30 years ago. I could have done some detecting and probably avoided a couple of situations. But yeah. Dave Dino, this is a very interesting concept. You know, in the trial practice, especially in a courtroom and so on, you're always confronted with, is it true or is it not true? You select the jury, you get certain responses from them. Are those responses true or not true? Witnesses on the stand who saw the accident, saw the incident, expert witnesses who come in and say this, that, or the other thing. And to try to unwrap this, yes, this person is genuine, etc., is really pretty interesting. So in part, as a trial lawyer, you learn those skills, but you never learn those skills to the way in which our guest has learned those skills. And indeed, to share a few thoughts we thought would really be good for our listening audience of how can you tell when it ain't true. And so with that, I wanted to welcome this terrific lawyer, a terrific person, a great intellect, a scientist. Phil, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Tom. Thank you for the introduction, Dave. Tom, that was quite an introduction and very flattering.
Tom, it ain't fair. It just ain't fair. Look, I have enough trouble just going into a courtroom. It's uncomfortable enough as it is. And You know, now you're going to tell me that you're going to bring in somebody who can actually tell whether I'm telling the truth or a lie. It's just not fair.
It isn't fair, but boys, it could be pretty helpful. You know, in jury selection, Dave Dino, that's pretty much the ball game in a lot of these cases. And it's massively important for the lawyer to be talking to the juror that he is talking to at that time, not to the whole crowd, to get that reaction. On the other hand, the lawyer doesn't know the reaction that other jurors are manifesting. The person who was almost as good as our guest was my dad. My dad would come with me. He would have a sweater on, sit in the back of the courtroom, and I would talk to the jurors and so forth, and he would watch the expressions and so forth of the other jurors while I was talking to the one juror. Then there was a break. We'd go to the men's room. He would look over at me and he says, "Juror number six hates you, okay?" So I got introduced a little bit to Phil's business with my pop, and he was pretty good at it too, without a doubt.
Okay, we're going to kind of track this along the way because we've got a lot of different elements to look at. We've got issues of the jury, we've got witnesses, that sort of thing. And it does begin, as you said, it begins with the jury. And when you're looking at a jury, when it's being interviewed, it seems to me you have two things that you're really looking at. One is what Tom has described, and that's some of the body language as to how they just feel about the attorney who's up in front of them. The other is, are they really truthfully answering the questions before them? This is, as Tom has indicated, this is kind of the very crucial beginning of any trial, isn't it?
It sure is. And it's an extraordinarily complex moment, as I'm sure Tom is very aware. You want to, in voir dire, you want to get a rapport with the potential juror, and you want an honest answer from the potential juror. And if you lay over on top of that techniques for uncovering deception, this puts an awful lot of pressure on the advocate in that moment. And in those situations, I think what Tom was doing with his father could be extraordinarily beneficial, to have somebody else observing while you are in real time trying to create the rapport with the individual, particularly if you're new to the science of deception detection. And I do put emphasis on the word science because there's an awful lot of nonsense out there that people are trying to pass off as science.
All right, before we go any further, I want you to tell us a little bit of your background and experience, the training, the studying, et cetera, that you've done. So you're just not a guy who sees somebody in the jury looking askance once in a while. You got some background here.
Well, I didn't want to be one of those charlatans. What I wanted to do early in my career was to confirm a hypothesis I had, which was that great trial lawyers could look at a juror or a witness, anybody, a judge, and they could determine whether that person was being truthful, simply because a great trial lawyer has that much experience interviewing people and questioning people. So in order to try to shortcut the many years that I thought it would take to get to that point, I took myself up to UCLA after I went through a trial training program called the TAP program, the Trial Advocacy Project. I had trained to become a prosecutor and spend some time in the criminal courts. And after I finished the training and passed the course, I went up to UCLA, spent many weeks up there trying to figure out what it takes to identify liars. You know, you see these body language experts on television. You know, there was that time when Tom Cruise was jumping on Oprah's couch, and all these body language experts would tell you what it meant, or they'll tell you in this most recent campaign, Mitt Romney was standing at a podium, and he was standing with most of his weight on his left foot, and his right foot was toes down. In other words, he didn't have his foot flat. He had his toes of his right foot kind of tapping the floor behind him while he was standing at the podium. And a body language expert said on national television, "Mitt Romney's not got both feet in the campaign."
Okay, that I understand that, but those people aside, your training was what?
My training was to go find the best person I could in the area. And all roads led to a guy named Paul Ekman, who was the chair of the Department of Psychology at the University of California, San Francisco Medical School. And I contacted Dr. Ekman, and I spent a couple of afternoons with him over a couple of years going through his research and reviewing video clips of witnesses and other people, politicians, and learning what the real scientists, you know, the real academics were saying about what you can and can't hope to achieve through body language and micro-expression science. And so my training was, as best as I could, was to really learn to read what was being published in the scientific journals about this and not what the people, for example, who were on some network television talking metaphorically about how people were interpreting how people were acting.
Tom?
Are there real signs that you can count on?
There are some things that you can count on, but you've got to be very careful. I'll tell you one thing that you cannot count on. There's no such thing as a tell of dishonesty. There is no scientific proof that there is any one thing or several things that people will do that directly reveals dishonesty.
Tom was kind of looking for that answer for his weekly poker game.
That's true.
We're going to pause at this point as you listen to Champions of Justice with Tom Girardi. Our guest is Philip Maltin. We're talking today about the detection of truth and deception. I'm Dave Deno. This is very interesting. Stick around. We've got a lot more right here at Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Trucks, motorcycles. If it's got a motor, we've got your man. If there was ever a time you needed an automotive expert like Leon Kaplan at your side, it's now. The Motor Man. Sunday mornings at 8 on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Imagine what your life could be like with a law degree. Think of the different areas of law in which you could practice. More importantly, the people you could help. Now imagine a law school that's as committed to Christian principles as it is to academic excellence. A school that's accredited and affordable. My name is Eric Halverson, and I don't have to imagine that school. I work there. I'm the dean of faith-based Trinity Law School in Orange County, and I invite you to come to our upcoming open house. See for yourself how scholarships and financial aid can put that law degree well within your reach. Learn how you can enroll without taking the law school admission test. The students we accept are the students we believe in. Imagine that. Make justice your mission. Our next open house is where that mission begins.
Attend Trinity Law School's open house Thursday evening, March 30th. That's Thursday, March 30th. Seating is limited. Register online today at tls.edu/openhouse. That's tls.edu/openhouse.
It's time to get your feast on with Norm's New York Steak and Shrimp Dinner. Hand-cut steak, golden fried shrimp, vegetable potato soup, and salad, all for $11.99. Don't choose between surf and turf. Get both at Norm's, open 24/7. Normsrestaurants.com.
Hi, I'm Sonny Reynolds, COO, founder of As Is Lending. BBB knows that we pride ourselves on providing our clients with the right loan product to meet their financial needs. Earning an A-plus rating from BBB shows that consumers can trust us to assist them on their path to financial freedom. And we strive to deliver exceptional customer care by listening to our clients' specific goals. Our BBB accreditation puts us on a short list of mortgage lenders BBB has verified. As Is Lending invites you to check our reviews at BBB.org and our website at asislending.com.
We all have issues, so let's start talking.
In Your Right Mind is a new weekly behavioral health show that focuses on issues that pertain to just about everyone.
Join me, Dr. Tanmoy Sharma, and my co-host, Christina Kusner, as we highlight topics that get people talking.
In Your Right Mind is every Sunday at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
And welcome back to Champions of Justice with Tom Girardi. Our guest is Philip Maltin, and our topic is the detection of truth and deception. Tom?
Erica said to me this morning, because I told her that Phil was going to be on the show, And she said, you know, Tom, she heard a person from the FBI, a woman very high up in terms of this sort of stuff, saying that you don't have, there isn't one issue out there, because people react differently. And the fact that I start looking over to the left doesn't necessarily mean something. You have to know me better to find out, yes, that is significant, right?
That's the baseline theory of deception detection. Two theories sort of woven into one, Tom. One is neuro-linguistic programming, popularly known as NLP.
And what is that?
That's actually an unscientific system that has gained a lot of traction in about the last 30 years. NLP is this, I'm making air quotes around the word, science. It's a pseudoscience that is based on a number of different cornerstones. One of them is that you mirror another person's behavior in order to try to bring that person's anxiety level down and somehow make you more comfortable to the person. Now, Dave is sitting across the table from me with his arms folded on the table, and I'm doing the same.
I noticed you were doing that.
I'm doing the same with Dave right now, only to illustrate something that a practitioner of NLP might say is an effective technique in terms of making me feel more comfortable to Dave. NLP would also say that if Dave asks me a question, or you, Tom, ask me a question, and I'm lying, I'm fabricating a response, that I would look up to my right. So if you're looking at me, be up to my left. And that is a reliable sign of dishonesty. It's not a reliable sign of dishonesty. There are no reliable signs of dishonesty. And in fact, last year, some researchers from some universities in Great Britain finally, once and for all, published research debunking that myth that the direction the eyes go actually has anything at all to do with dishonesty. But then you are also, Tom, talking about the baseline theory, which is, why is it, for example, that parents are so good, or why is it that your wife is so good at determining when you're being dishonest? And the theory goes that it's because we have people whom we're close with at a baseline, and we know how they act when they're telling the truth, and we know how they act when they're lying, or at least we think we do. And what it's based on is the concept, and I think it's an effective concept, and I think it's a scientifically proven concept of cognitive pressure, that the more cognitive pressure there is on you when you're lying, the more likely there is to be a change in your behavior in some way that tells you at least that the person you're talking with is feeling nervous or uncomfortable about something.
In other words, you can tell that they're out of their comfort zone.
Exactly. Not necessarily lying.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something different going on, and that's where that's what you seize on, and that's where your investigation really begins.
Okay, so the brain then is triggering a different way in which I speak or gesture or look, etc.
Exactly.
And so if I'm here and I answer five questions in one fashion and then ask the next question that I'm going to be deceitful about, you will see a change perhaps in my voice, a change perhaps in the spacing of the words as I talk, a change perhaps in my gestures, etc. Is that right?
Have you spent time with this? That's exactly right. And the more significant the issue, and it's called a high-stakes moment, the more important the outcome. In other words, the higher the penalty for being caught and the higher the reward for not being caught in those high-stake moments, you're going to end up getting more cognitive pressure because there's more to gain or to lose. Versus, you know, the perfunctory moment, Tom, where we met this morning and you said, good morning, how are you? And I said, I'm fine. It's a perfunctory moment. If I'm not fine, it doesn't matter.
You might have had a terrible morning.
Right.
Right.
But the normal response is, I'm fine. You don't want to bring that to this situation.
Yeah.
How are you this morning? I'm fine. Did you rob the liquor store? Well, now here's a little different issue.
Might be a little cognitive pressure on you if you, in either case, actually, if there's something to lose, if you're telling the truth and you didn't, you there might be some real cognitive pressure. For example, in the interrogation room in the police department, if they don't believe you, you've got a lot to lose.
Hmm. Okay, so you and I go to trial. You're going to assist me, and how do you do this? So let's take an expert witness on the stand, and mm-hmm. the expert witness is saying, no, Actos doesn't cause bladder cancer, and we're trying to show that it does cause bladder cancer. So how are you going to help me realize that there's some deception taking place?
In reality, that's going to be very difficult. The work that we would have done using these techniques would have happened way before we got to trial. It's going to be rare, I think, for, given the rules of trial, it's going to be rare, I think, for us to be able to, in real time, identify that somebody is lying for the first time in front of a jury, and to be able to use the techniques that I and other researchers have developed to try to get to the truth. We just don't have enough time in front of the jury, it being such an artificial environment. And discovery, of course, the pretrial process of uncovering information is where most of this work should have occurred.
Okay, let's go back to 6 months before trial and some deposition testimony or something like that. Is that what you're getting at?
Yes.
Okay, how are you going to help me?
We've got the time before we take testimony from the expert to learn what we can and what we need to do with the expert. And then, of course, we've got the questioning of the expert at deposition. Now, there are a couple of techniques that are very effective in terms of uncovering deception. I have found that the most powerful technique in terms of uncovering deception, which is one that is receiving a lot of attention in the literature within about the last 3 or 4 years. The technique is withholding the truth. It's withholding information. And it's one that I think that good trial lawyers probably already know, and you see it a lot in deposition. What we would do is we would meet the expert. We would in the best of all possible worlds for using these techniques, you would try to lower the expert's anxiety or any witness's or any person's anxiety. You would try to get them to speak as freely as you could, so you'd get that baseline on how they act when they're speaking freely about things that you would have a reasonably good idea were truthful.
So I'm going to ask him, hey, how do you feel? I'm going to ask him, did you go to Marquette University, and graduated there? Questions like that. So he's answering those in a certain fashion, and he did feel good today, and he did go to Marquette, and he did get his degree, etc. So I have that sort of a baseline. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
Okay.
There's a baseline that you can develop right then, which is a baseline for nervousness. Mm. You've got a pretty good idea, given the context, that the person you're speaking with is probably not going to be 100% comfortable unless they're on some kind of beta blockers or something, and you wouldn't know. And you can use that as a baseline for later when you're speaking with them and you ask them certain questions and their behavior changes. You can say to yourself, in what way is the behavior changing now? Is it changing in a way that is consistent with what I saw to begin with when we were talking about things where I thought the expert might be a little bit nervous but truthful? Or is it changing in a way that I hadn't seen before that makes me think I got a hot spot here? I may not be getting the entire story. I need to dig in.
Okay, so then you think that you can accurately, given enough background and so forth, you can accurately predict or decide that this person is being less than honest in a response that's important?
That's a very good question, and the answer is no. The answer is I think I can accurately pick a moment where I need to dig in because something has happened that's alerted me to the fact that I got an unusual response, that I have a nervous response, that I have an inconsistent response. I can't tell you, and I don't think that there's anybody alive who can tell you, that because you get a particular response from somebody, that based on behavior alone, you have a lie.
Okay, well, can you ever formulate an opinion that you probably have a lie?
Yes, you can.
You can do that.
You can formulate the opinion that you probably have a lie based on a number of factors, including context and information, preparation. Yeah, and it's the behavior of the person across the table that is going to help you to decide whether you need to dig in or not, whether you're getting the whole story or not.
We're going to catch our breath at this point as you listen to Champions of Justice with Tom Girardi, and our guest today is Philip Moulton. We're talking about the detection of truth and deception in the courtroom and later in the workplace as well. I'm Dave Dino. Don't go away. We've got a lot more to talk about here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Speaking of problems.
Coming up on the next Drive Home with Jillian Barber and John Phillips, the fallout of the failure to pass a health care bill in Washington.
Plus, we'll tell you which movie ruled the box office this past weekend and hopefully track my good friend Kate Del Castillo down.
Live and local right after Dr. Drew and Mike Hathaway right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
That's Del Castillo.
Hi, this is Chip Wade, DIY expert, TV host, and lead designer for WadeWorks Creative. Are you in the market for new appliances? Head to the Home Depot to get big savings on top brand name appliances you trust, like KitchenAid, Samsung, LG, and Whirlpool. Saving on appliances has never been easier, with free delivery on appliance purchases of $396 or more. Just pick out the latest models from top brands and let the Home Depot take care of the rest. Visit homedepot.com/appliances for details. The Home Depot, more saving, more doing.
It's Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. And right now, you can save up to 35% on appliances, like the Whirlpool stainless steel French door refrigerator. With its AccuChill temperature management system and full-width pantry, it keeps food at the correct temperature. And during Spring Black Friday, it's a special buy at just $998. Over $700 in savings. Nobody beats our prices. Guaranteed. Only at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. U.S. only while supplies last. See store for details. Valid through April 12th.
He learned to pitch in your backyard. Now his team's coming over to celebrate their high school championship. So you need to patch those bare spots fast. Pennington One Step Complete has a revolutionary formula that repairs bare spots in only 2 weeks or less. Pennington's been trusted since 1945, and now it works even faster. One Step Complete from Pennington. Honest green. Get your lawn ready for any occasion. Head to your local retailer to pick up One Step Complete.
At Mattress Firm, we admit we have lots of sales, but this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity so big, even we're impressed. Save up to 70% off famous name brands. Plus, take up to $2,000 off floor models from Sealy, Tempur-Pedic, and others. Everything must go to make room for the next generation of sleep products. So don't miss this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to sleep and save like never before. Only at Mattress Firm. For offer details, visit mattressfirm.com/circulars. Product offer and prices may vary in Hawaii.
Back with another portion of Champions of Justice with Tom Girardi. Our guest is Philip Moulton, and our topic on the table today is the detection of truth and deception. Tom?
Okay, so you think that if the person is not giving you the whole story, you think that you can form an opinion that, a realistic opinion, that there's more that should that this person should be talking about.
Yeah, I think you can. Can I give you a couple of examples?
No, I need one. This is okay. I'm writing all this down. Okay, so go ahead.
I have a law partner, Chris Wagner, real good guy. And I was talking to one of the lawyers in my firm about yoga, because yoga is the thing that's keeping me together at this stage in my life. You know, it's what I need in order to be more active. And so I was talking to this lawyer, and I said, yeah, I'm doing yoga. I love it. Chris Wagner walks up, and he says, what are you guys talking about? And I said, we're talking about yoga. Chris flashes on his face a micro expression of contempt, which is an expression on the face which is asymmetric. Imagine a half smile and a wrinkle of the nose. And it happens in a brief moment, less than a second, less than half a second, microexpression of contempt. That's scientifically grounded. That's a scientifically grounded conclusion that certain expressions of emotion on the face reveal a real emotion that the person is feeling. So Chris flashes a microexpression of contempt, and I say to Chris, "What's your problem with yoga?" And Chris says, "I don't have a problem with yoga." And I said, "No, you definitely have a problem with yoga." And he says, "I don't think I have a problem with yoga." And I said, "Just tell me how you feel about yoga. I need to know." And he goes, "I love it." Now I'm thinking I got myself a liar here, right? Chris is lying to me. And then Chris says, "You know, I bought a year-long program at a yoga studio and I never used a single lesson." The contempt was not about yoga. It was about his decision to buy the year-long program. So the point being, you may see a cluster of emotion. You may see an expression of emotion. You may see a cluster of nervousness. When you start thinking that you can read a person's mind about what it means, you start sending yourself down the wrong road. What I should have said in that moment with Chris, and I learned, what I should have said was, "Chris, is there something that you feel about yoga? Chris, is there an emotion that you have about yoga? Did something happen with you with yoga?" Instead of saying, "You hate yoga," that was my own attempt and my own incorrect attempt at trying to understand what he was feeling.
Okay, but the key thing here is it's the first fraction of a second that tells the story.
Yes.
It tells you that something is not perhaps as it's spoken.
It could tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so when Chris says, "I love yoga," and he flashes a microexpression of contempt, I'm not gonna conclude what Chris is thinking. I'm just gonna say, Chris is feeling something that's in opposition to what he's saying. I need to figure out what it is.
Right.
Here's what gets really interesting, Tom, is that imagine this. Imagine that that we're doing Voix dire on Dave, and you say to Dave, how do you feel about large verdicts? Are you comfortable with large verdicts? And Dave shakes his head, yes. And then you say, if in this case, you know, the law were to require a particular outcome, would you be able to do that? He says to you yes as he shakes his head no.
Right.
Okay?
Sure.
And then you walk away saying, "Oh, I got to get rid of Dave because Dave's body is inconsistent. It's disjointed from his message, from what he's saying." And this is another one of these things where you walk away thinking, "I was able to read this guy's mind." And in reality, what Dave was thinking was, "I have no problem following the law."
Mm.
"No, I will not violate the law if it requires me to come back with a high verdict. Therefore, yes, I can do that, Tom." And so you need to really remember that you have to do a couple things, which is to get that baseline on Dave. When Dave shakes his head no and says the word yes, is it because he's thinking, "I couldn't do anything but this"?
Mm.
Or is Dave's baseline that when he always says yes, his head goes up and down, and when he always says no, his head goes side to side? That's why it takes a little bit more digging than what I think is being taught out there by a lot of people who want to teach techniques by which people inaccurately will read people quickly. People are looking for the quick hit.
Okay. We talked a little bit about the quick hit and facial expression on the question like you just demonstrated. Are there other quick hits with respect to body movement that is important to look at?
No quick hits. I think it takes time, inquiry, patience, and curiosity. I think curiosity is what great trial lawyers have a lot of too.
Okay, you got to explain this. I don't understand it.
What makes somebody great at identifying liars, what makes somebody in law enforcement a master or great at interrogating people and uncovering the truth, is not browbeating somebody into submission. The best interrogators, the most effective interrogators, are not the ones who are super charismatic. They're not the ones who are super aggressive. They're the ones who are super curious. And they're also the ones who can really make a connection with the witness or the suspect.
Okay, I need an example of this.
We could go back to the example with Chris, where he says to me that he loves yoga and he gives me a microexpression of contempt. One process could be to say to him, "Look, Your body is saying one thing and your mouth is saying another thing, Chris. You're being inconsistent. That would certainly get Chris to back off. He'd probably fold his arms. He'd walk away. Whatever. I wouldn't get anywhere with him.
It's kind of confrontational.
It's very confrontational. But if you've got curiosity and you're not getting an explanation that is logical, you're not getting an explanation that makes sense, you can't let go until you've satisfied yourself that what Chris is saying is logical, or that you have an interpretation of what he's saying that somehow makes sense to you. That's what I mean.
Tom?
You know, Dave Dino, in jury selection, a lot of times you'll get a response, you'll ask a question, and jury says yes. And then by repeating the juror's answer, the juror then goes on. You know, in this case, there could be a lot involved in money damages. Would you go along with that? Yes. Then you come back and say, yes? Yeah, it seems to me, blah, blah, blah.
See? So the more you can get the person to talk, the more you can detect.
Yeah, Tom has hit exactly on a technique that's used to gather more information. You want people to talk to you, because the more they talk to you, the more information you get, not only about how they're thinking, but how they're acting. And more information is always better than less when trying to decide whether somebody is telling you the truth.
With this scientific background, given enough of an opportunity to look at a witness or look at a juror and so forth, you think you can formulate fairly reliable ideas of whether or not the person is being truthful or being less than truthful?
I think I can formulate very reliable ideas about where I need to dig in, and then hopefully my ability to use techniques such as the one that you were just describing that you use with jurors, my ability to use techniques is going to get me more information, and with that information I'm going to be able to make a conclusion that is far more reliable than if I rely exclusively on the words being used or the body language being sent.
You know, the cases that go to trial now, there's been a total change. You know, before, the idea would be that jurors decide the facts and the law is the law. Jurors don't decide facts anymore in a civil case. In a criminal case, they still decide the facts. Who
did what to
whom? Who robbed the place, right? But in the civil cases that now go to trial, it's all philosophy. For example, the drunk truck driver who runs over the kid on the sidewalk, that case didn't go to trial. They settle that case and it's over with. The cases that go to trial are those cases where the facts are admitted. I'll show you a road design case. There's a good one. I can show you a picture of every road that has been found to be defective.
Mm-hmm.
You know what it looks like? It looks like a road.
Mm.
In other words, the facts are all admitted. The road had this curvature, it had this angle, it had this guardrail, it had this. All the facts are admitted. Is it defective or not? Your guy says, oh, this is defective. This causes an accident. Their guy says, this doesn't cause an accident. The blah, blah, blah. Once again, all the facts are admitted. So what is really going to decide that case is, in fact, the juror's philosophical bent before they ever sit down. How about this? A bad faith case. You have a $500,000 insurance policy. Lo and behold, you cause an accident. They could settle it for $500,000. They don't do it. You go to trial. You get hit with $1 million. So now you're filing a case against the insurance company of, why didn't you guys settle this case? Otherwise, look at the mess I'm in. All the facts are admitted. You had $500,000. They offered $200,000. The jury came in for $1 million. Did they commit bad faith or not? That's all the philosophical bent of that juror. That's what's going to decide that case. So it's a very interesting situation that I think now the jury selection in so many of these cases is the most important part of the case.
In those cases in which you were just talking about, Tom, the wild card, it seems to me, would also be the lawyer's commitment to the case. And if the lawyer is exhibiting behavior to the jury that suggests that there's something awkward about the way that the lawyer is presenting the case, it could indicate to the jury that the lawyer doesn't actually believe in his own case.
Wow.
And so so in that sort of situation, the thing that we're talking about now, where you're exactly right. I mean, I've never actually heard anybody describe it quite the way you have, which is that, you know, the facts are already known and admitted before we get to the argument to the jury. In that situation, aside from picking the right jury, it seems to me that the lawyer's got to be committed to the lawsuit.
Oh, real good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these jurors are watching you. If you look like you're full of baloney, baby, this ain't going to sell. And if you, in fact, I'll back up. Jurors now are every bit as smart as you are. You know, one time, Dave Dino, anybody who had a job, a mom who was raising kids, whatever, they'd be excused from jury duty.
Mm.
And then you'd end up with kind of a group of people who didn't really have too much going on. And those jurors maybe could be swayed by, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, you must, you know. Now then, you're going to have, on that jury, you're going to have four of those people. And these jurors are all four-person juries. There are 12 people there, but four people decide the case. Their persuasiveness with the others, okay?
Mm.
And you can pick out the stronger personalities as you try these things. But the truth of the matter is that now these jurors are every bit as smart as you are, baby. And if they catch you being deceitful, if they catch you that you look like you're not being honest on anything, you're toast.
Hmm.
Matter of fact, you have to do such things as saying, you know, that expert they called, that guy was fairly impressive. But you know what? Wouldn't it have been better had he seen these other documents that he had never seen before he made that opinion? Blah blah blah. So you got a man, you got to work this thing, so you have credibility with that jury. Because all these cases that go to trial, Dave Dino, are a 6-5 pick'em fight. Because those are the ones that go to trial.
We're going to pause one more time as you listen to Champions of Justice with Tom Girardi and our guest Philip Moulton, and our topic is the detection of truth and deception. And we've been talking about it in the courtroom, a little bit about how to use it in life and in personal relationships, but we're also going to get into the area of employment law, the issues of harassment, and interviewing people as well. So stick around here at Talk Radio 790 KABC.
That's the bottom of the list of people you want to pardon is someone who put military lives in danger. And so
right?
From a PR standpoint, purely, I'm going to be very, very cynical about this.
And provocative.
From a PR standpoint, it just seems like, where did this come from other than, was this woman commuted because she's transsexual?
Dr. Drew. Midday Live. With Mike Catherwood. Weekdays, noon to 3 on KABC.
Hi, this is Maury Moreland Morrison, here to tell you GEICO has more than just great savings. Much more. Yes, while GEICO could help you rack up more moolah faster than you can say metamorphosis, they've also been the fastest growing auto insurer for more than 10 years. That's more like it. Furthermore, GEICO has fast and friendly claim service. That might seem like an oxymoron, but it's not. All the more reason to say no other auto insurer has more than GEICO. GEICO. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
You can learn to DIY just about anything.
Today, we'll be making our very own bath beads. We'll need mineral oil, ammonia, and gosh, I feel like I'm forgetting something.
After all, some things are better left to the pros, like buying a home. Because without an expert to guide you, you're just asking to get burned.
Oh, look at that. It also works as a hair remover.
So DIY yourself a favor and get Realtor. Head to Realtor.com/getrealtor today. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
Hey there, what's the frequency?
1090.
And the letters?
KABC.
Talk Radio 790.
KABC.
Back with our final portion of today's Champions of Justice with our guest Philip Moulton, talking about the detection of truth and deception. Your host is Tom Girardi. We've been talking, Tom, in the area of trial, but what about over in the area of employment as well? Where does this come into play in this whole field of employment?
Good question, Dave Dino. Answer it.
um the best use of my read system, the best use of the techniques is in teaching human resources professionals to back off a little bit. They're using metrics today. They're using tests today. They're looking for, well, to use the metaphor that we used earlier, a quick hit. People like tricks. Human resources professionals are people plus. They love tricks. And what they need to do is back off a little bit, communicate with people, particularly during interviews or during investigations, not look to these techniques that are being taught out there. You know, for example, we spoke about this to begin with, the direction the eyes are going or those kinds of things. To communicate with people, to find the hot spots, and to dig in and to try to find out, let their curiosity carry them. I think that's probably the most effective use of the read system and these techniques that we've been talking about in an employment setting.
But it's fairly important for an employer to get the truth. You know, and I suppose if I were to go in and start saying, did you do this or not, and so forth, probably I'm not going to get a real good response, right?
Oh, you'll get a real predictable response. It just wouldn't be a good one. It wouldn't be very helpful.
Instead of saying, you know, I'm a little disappointed. You know, these things have come up to my attention, and you know, I think this could really cause problems for the company. What do you think? Do you think that you did everything you could have done to avoid that sort of a approach? I'm probably going to get better action.
Much better. Can you tell me about this? What happened there? And the thing that you were talking about a minute ago, Tom, about the jury, where you just say you could, or you repeat something that leaves a space for the employee to fill. Again, more information is always better than less, because it gives you an opportunity to sift through what you've got and begin to make determinations.
What you're talking about also has application in the very sensitive and very sticky area of harassment in the workplace.
Absolutely, it does. Harassment in the workplace is a particularly interesting area, because either one side is lying and one telling the truth, or there's a real misperception going on, and people are interpreting the moment quite differently. And so in those situations, again, you need to get beneath the surface a little bit and find out what's going on. Some human resources professionals are by nature suspicious of their workforce. Some human resources professionals are by nature, not particularly communicative. I don't know. I mean, it's different person to person. We need information. We need observation. We need curiosity. And the greatest technique known to man in terms of identifying dishonesty, it's not torture. It's withholding information. I know something that you don't. I ask you about those things, you not knowing that I know. I can compare your answer with what I have.
Okay, that's pretty good. Huh?
Yeah.
Right. So that's all right. So this thing is not a open and shut. There's no meter that you just raise and put on the guy's forehead and he's telling the truth or telling a lie, etc. It's much more complicated.
Much more complicated. And I love, I'm like this spot check program that the federal government is using, surveillance of passengers by observation techniques. It's what the TSA is using.
Okay, what is that?
Well, this is actually largely a process that was developed by researchers such as Paul Ekman, based on micro-expression science and baseline interpretations. And there's what they're teaching the TSA agents to do is to look for clusters of nervous behavior and to observe micro-expressions in the people that they're speaking with, if they're interviewing people or interrogating them at the ports, at the airports. And they use the micro-expressions to try to determine whether what the person is saying is in opposition to what they're expressing on the face. There's a very separate group of researchers who are an outstanding group of researchers who are saying that the techniques that are being taught in the spot check program are ineffective. And what these people are saying you need to use is not micro-expression science and not baseline. What they're saying you need to do is you need to add cognitive pressure to people. First, what you need to do is communicate with them and get as much information, and then ramp up the cognitive pressure on these people through certain techniques.
Holy Toledo. Now, law firms are using people like you to try and get a handle on some of this stuff, huh?
Well, they'd be better off if they did. I can tell you that in my experience, lawyers think that they're extraordinarily good at this and don't need any help. And the science says that everybody is about as good at it as guessing the side on which a toss coin will land.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, without all the study and everything else and the review of all those studies that have been conducted and all the research and so forth, a lawyer who doesn't have that background obviously is going to have some trouble. But this is the ball game, man. If I can't find out, once I find out you're lying, Dave Dino, mm-hmm. then I can really attack you pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to
mm-hmm.
win the case. Mm-hmm. Their big guy was Dino. And he came in and he said this, and now we got your line and your toast.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's really a pretty important ball game there. And the jury selection process is terrific. I have a couple of philosophical questions that I ask jurors. You can only ask the question once because you want the gut reaction of the jury. One question is, what do you think of the jury system? Oh, you have a right to a trial by jury. What do you think of the jury system? I suppose if we can't find a better way to do things, this isn't a bad way to do it.
Mm.
Now, those two jurors are saying two different things.
Mm.
The first juror is the plaintiff juror, uses a big word. You have a right to a trial by jury. And because a right to trial by jury means you have a right to a lot of money, because the only thing the papers ever print is jury awards and at some huge number. Now, we lawyers all know there are a whole bunch of times when the jury awards zero, but that never makes the papers. So the concept of jury, you have a right to a trial by jury. The other guy's the defense juror. He has four negatives. I suppose if we can't, it's not bad.
Mm.
Holy Toledo, see? So this guy's trying to answer your question in such a way that he's modifying your question.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, this guy doesn't like that jury system at all, because in his mind, these jurors award way too much money. So just one little philosophical question. Now, I can only use that once, because the third juror down, now this guy's had too much time to think about it, so I'm not going to get that gut reaction mm-hmm. that you talked about earlier in the show.
We've talked all around the issue of the truth today and how to know the truth. What's our conclusion?
Well, I think from a lawyer's standpoint and maybe a life standpoint, it's really important to know the truth.
Mm-hmm.
If you're an executive in a company, if you're trying a case, if you're going to go home at night, knowing the truth becomes a pretty darned important aspect of life, I think. Maybe it's the most important aspect of life. And in these situations where there's a kind of a hostility, be it in the workplace, be it in the jury trial, whatever, unless you find out the truth, unless you have a couple little suggestions, maybe from somebody like Phil, you know, it's you're going to overlook things. That's all there is to it. But it's very interesting how different the jury system has become since the Seventh Amendment was first put in. I don't think they talked about any of this.
Phil, you look like you have an answer to that.
Well, I think Tom's answer is exactly right. Moral perspective. I think from an individual perspective, you can't read another person's mind. You need to lower your expectations about what you can and can't do. And if you think you're really good at identifying liars, the science says you're not.
Mm-hmm.
So be careful.
Phil, I have one final question. Have you been telling the truth today on this show? I noticed, first of all, the facial expression, Dave Dino and I both picked it up.
He's been moving around
a
lot.
Yeah, exactly. Have you been telling the truth?
Well, the answer is, what's my baseline?
Oh, I like it. You have been listening to Champions of Justice with Tom Girardi. Our guest today is Philip Moulton. Our producer is Amanda Mars. I'm Dave Dino. And a final thought for the day comes from Clarence Darrow. And he was a little rough in his language. Chase after the truth like hell, and you'll free yourself. Well, our guest chases after the truth in that same way. And as such, he is a champion of justice. Thank you for joining us. We are the champions.
This show furnished by